All right, good evening, everybody, and thank you again for fine for hosting. And
it should be Aliyas Neshama for Fega Bas Yitzchak. I also want to welcome my father, Rabbi Joseph Ozarowski, from visiting from Chicago. They're here to visit us for the week, so I told him you have to come to the shir if you're in Yad Binyamin. You gotta come. It's one of the highlights here.
The
highlight. Well, it depends who you are. For you, maybe it's the highlight.
Wait, did you tell him that, or did you hear that from someone?
That I can't tell you. I have to ask him yourself.
Okay. For me, it's the highlight.
I thought our children were the highlight.
Yeah, that too.
Okay. All right. So we were in the middle of discussing different things that you can use maaser money for. We discussed last week a number of different aspects to this question of maaser. We discussed using maaser money for mitzvos, to pay for mitzvos. We discussed buying sfarim. We discussed a couple other things. We're going to continue this week. Hopefully we'll finish up this week as well. The first thing we will start with this week, and hopefully you all have source sheets by now, is the question of supporting children with maaser. Maaser money. Very relevant topic, I guess, considering.
Perfect.
I guess I'm already old enough that, well, we'll see. We'll see. Okay. We're going to be
learning it, living in Israel.
Yeah, right. We'll see about that also. Okay. So we're going to be looking at section number 3 here in the source sheet. Let me just give you a little bit of background. I did not put all the sources that are relevant to this part of the topic on the source sheet, so I'll just give you a little bit of background here. There's a very, very interesting Gemara in Ksubos. It's actually a series of Gemaras. The implication of the Gemaras in Ksubos, it's on Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis. One sugya, there's another sugya on Daf Samach Hei Amud Beis. Basically, what comes out of the two sugyas in the Gemara is the following, that, and don't jump up with shock here. The Gemara seems to say that children that are under the age of 6 must be supported with your own money, meaning you are not allowed to use maaser money for supporting your children that are under age 6. Okay, very good so far, right? Makes sense. Because obviously that's something that you have to do. You are obligated to support your children under the age of 6. So as we discussed previously, so most poskim hold that a davar shebechovah is something which you are obligated to do, and certainly a mitzvah type obligation, a halachic obligation, you are not allowed to use maaser money for that type of obligation. The implication of my statement, of course, is, well, I told you that under the age of 6 you can't use maaser money. It sounds like over the age of 6 you can. So there's the other part of that Gemara, fascinating, really.
Why is it an obligation to support your children?
All right, we are not going to have time to get into that now, but it is very clear from the halacha that there is an obligation to support your children. That is part of the marriage contract. That is part of your familial obligations that you have taken upon yourself to support your children with your money.
And it's part of the Ksuba.
Yeah, and it's definitely, if you look through the same Gemaras and Ksubos that I mentioned, you look through the whole section there from Memtes to Sa'anachay, which discusses all of these different types of Chiyuvim, it's very clear there. And again, it's not necessarily a Chiyuv Dorayin, so we're not going to get into the details of that now, but it's very clear from the Gemara that at least at some stage during history that Chazal enacted some sort of takana that you absolutely must support your children.
If it's a question of the Ketubah.
Did you not want to support your children?
Right. No.
I hope I don't see your children on the street tomorrow after we talk. No.
No, I want to say that I don't have to, and that's why I can use maaser money.
Good, yeah, no. So it's clear from the Gemara that you are, again, from some level, at least
Midrabban. For my children.
Right. I won't tell you why you said that, don't worry. it's very clear from the Gemara that at some stage in history, perhaps a little bit later than some of the other stages, but certainly according to Chazal, that you definitely have to support your children. Again, it could be from a stage. I think one Gemara says it's from Usha, meaning one of the takanas from the Dinim there. Again, we don't have the time to get into the details now, but it's very clear that there is a chiyuv from those Gemaras.
On the wife, on the mother also?
Well, no, the mother doesn't own the money, remember?
No,
sure.
No, if you have a situation where the woman is the main person, so they get that agreement that she owns what she
That's going to be a question that we're not going to have time to get into now. Meaning, if you're talking about a case where the woman is alive and the husband has died, so then there may be a...
No, sure. Yeah. The woman is... I'm at home,
right.
Where my wife works.
Right.
And she owns money, which she owns, because she's allowed to say, Aileen is on it for... So she owns, so then can she use the maaser money?
Okay, good question. So most cases...
Which happens a lot in the Haredi.
Right. I hear the question. It's a good question. If the case is that the wife owns the money, meaning that the wife owns the money, it's not clear that the same obligation exists on her that exists on you. But the bottom line is going to be that she's definitely going to have to support her children. Again, from the halachic sources, it seems to be most of the sources are assuming that the money, you know, the money belongs to the husband, and even her money belongs to the husband. So you don't really have that question so much. But it seems to be, again, it only seems to be from some point along the way, definitely get to the point that she can do it. However, there might be certain distinctions when it comes to that, and some of the sfarim actually talk about this. I don't have time to get into a net where my sfarim are drying, so a little spill before. But the Achron do have a discussion about that question. So maybe we'll leave that aside for now and discuss it a little bit later. I don't see it right now. It's in here somewhere. So we'll I'll see if I can find it afterwards. Okay. Okay. So for the rest of this discussion, for most of the regular cases, okay, most normal cases where you have a husband and a wife, and halachically the husband, we're going to assume that the father has the obligation to support the children. So in those cases, we have a question: when the child is over the age of six, so is there really an obligation to support them or not? So there's the other part of the Gemara basically says that that the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Tehillim that has to do with tzedakah, and the Gemara says, I don't have the Gemara in front of me, but something about the Gemara says something about tzedakah b'chol eis, that somebody who the pasuk in Tehillim praises a person who gives tzedakah at all times. And the Gemara says, who is this talking about? So the Gemara says, this is talking about somebody who supports his banav ubenosav haketanim, his young children. So the way that most of the Mefarshim there understand it, Rashi and I think the Rambam and a number of other Mefarshim understand it, is that this Gemara is talking about children that are above the age of six. If it's below the age of six, there's no tzedakah involved. You have a chiyuv to support them. If it's above the age of six, they're still considered to be small children. But yet the Gemara is saying that you have some sort of element of tzedakah, that you're doing tzedakah all the time, because of the fact that you're constantly supporting them. Based on that, so the Beis Yosef and a number of other poskim basically say that there's actually a possibility of using maaser or tzedakah money to support your children above age six, because there's no chiyuv to do it. If you take a look at source number three, so he quotes it here in a slightly different form. Let's see what he says. So, Chus Maharam Meirotenberg. In the Chuas of the Maharam, Rottenberg, Prague, etc., etc., Kosov, he writes, Ulufazer Masros of La'anim, Tzarach Lomar Lebonav, Hagadolim. So it seems that we're talking about here your older children. She'enu Chayel Tabo Bohem. So if you're not able to, if you don't have to, you don't have an obligation to support them, then it's Mutar. So certainly in this case, the Shach says that that it's mutter for your older children. I apologize, this was not the source that I wanted here. We'll read that source again in just a minute. But The way that the Beis Yosef understands it, what the Shach is basing himself on here, is that anybody who is gedolim, which in our context the Beis Yosef assumes is over the age of six, that's the key point. According to the Beis Yosef, the children that are considered gedolim in this context are over the age of six, you are allowed to support from ma'aser money. And the Shach is sort of basing himself on the same context here. This is the way that the Shach seems to be understood. That's children that are banav ha-gedolim. Gedolim here does not mean age 13. It might mean, according to what we were just saying, it means already age 6, that you don't have a chiv l'tapel bohem, that you don't have a chiv to, you know, to help them out. Meaning, again, strict obligation of the Gemara, we said, is up till age 6, then it's mutter. Da'afilu lo'avim mutter la'seis imhu ani, back in the Shach in source number 3. That even if your father is poor, you're allowed to support him for master money, mishum kvod avim, because of the honor due to your father. Baruch Hashem, in our situation, we don't have to do that. So Baruch Hashem, my father gives us money when we need sometimes, but I can't say if it's for master money or not yet, but we'll get to that. That should read in the parentheses there. V'kolshken levanov demutzer b'makom she'ein ba'ir takana l'aseis l'kis shel tzedakah. Certainly, to give money to your children is permitted in a situation where the city does not have some sort of special tzedakah fund specifically for these types of children. So he says, umashma demutzer afilu yesh biyado yecholus l'farnes b'makom acher. Does that have its tzedakah? The Shach says, based on the Maharam, it seems to be that even if you do have other money, you would be allowed to support your children from the money which is tzedakah money. Very, very interesting, and I guess today's times this would be considered to be a radical Shach and a radical Beis Yosef. But from the Gemara, it seems again that the Gemara society was a little bit different than our own, and therefore above age 6, if you have no obligation to support them, then it seems that halachically you are allowed to use maaser money to support your children. The Taz disagrees. The Taz basically understands the Gemara there to be referring to tzedakah, but the Taz seems to say that that's the type of tzedakah which is an obligation, and you cannot support your children from this maaser money. It's not clear exactly how he's going to read the Gemara, but he definitely understands that the Gemara is talking about tzedakah, which does count as tzedakah money, but you cannot use maaser money for it. Meaning it counts as tzedakah, but your maaser, your whatever custom you have of fulfilling your maaser obligation, whatever that might be, that you cannot use that money for. Okay, that's a very important distinction, which we've discussed in the past, that it could be that certain things you can have for tzedakah, they can count as tzedakah, but they are not going to. You're not going to be allowed to use your maaser money for it because the Taz felt that that is considered to be a chov. It's considered to be an obligation. Okay, that's the opinion of the Taz. So the Taz is going to disagree on that point. This remains a machlokas achronim. When you get to Bizman Hazek, contemporary times, so obviously the society is going to change things a little bit. Now today, if you say to anyone that your 7-year-old son, you decided you're going to throw him on the you would have thrown him on the street, but because of your good grades, it's, you're being really, really nice, you're going to decide you'll keep him in the house, you decide you'll give him food for the day, you decide you'll pay for his expenses, you know, you're going to be an extra Baal Chesed by supporting your 8-year-old child. People will, you know, they'll send you to prison, right? They'll send you to the police if they find you that you're, if they discover that you're doing things like that. So the question is, today, does the status of society change the halachas of maser in this context? So Rav Moshe has a very, very famous tshuva here in source number 4, in Chilak Aleph, Simon Kuf Mem Gimel of Yoredeya. And Rav Moshe basically wants to claim that today that halacha has changed as well. V'lachein v'rov b'nei adam, mizman hazeh, for most people today, uver prapim dinasenu, specifically in our country, which he, of course, is referring to the United States, shadarim kulam yachad, that everybody, all the family lives together, meaning that your 7 or 8-year-old children are with you. They don't get, you know, sent somewhere else. They live with the rest of your family. Chayaf ha'abim zonot banav ubenosav. Rav Moshe says that the father is obligated to support his children. Af ha'gedolim, even ones that are a little bit older, which we'll discuss more in just a second. Mitzad achiyuv mizonos shela, ad sheyu kifi haderach sholchim harviach. Basically, until the point that the children are able to make a living for themselves, meaning when they start getting jobs. Up until that point, Rav Moshe claims that the father has an obligation to support them. And let's say that they decide they're going to stretch out their graduate school career or whatever it is, and they're not going to work until after they get married. So then again, he brings in a whole other concept here, which we don't really have time to get into. But basically, he says that because the wife goes up with him and she doesn't go down with him, so chayv mizonosan. So in that case, that at that point, the husband or the child in this case, I mean the child of his parents, he would now be chayv to support his family because of the fact that she, the wife, has to be supported by him. But up to the point of where they get married, it would be, as long as he doesn't have a job yet, it would be, according to Moshe, chiyuv for the father, the parent, to support his child in any in a normal situation. Let's just finish the motion. Therefore, you cannot use maser money to support them because this is like a chov. You are obligated to support them. You cannot use maser money, according to most poskim, to fulfill an obligation. And therefore, the Moshe says, when is the shas halacha going to apply that he says that you can use maser money to support your children that are banav ha-gedolim? He says that's only going to apply at the point when they are already along the path to supporting themselves, meaning they already have a job. At that point, once they already have money to support themselves, then already you can talk about using maser money to support them. That's Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe is a very logical chiddush, but halachically a very major chiddush nonetheless, because most of the Makoros seem to imply otherwise. Rav Moshe basically is saying, well, the Makoros lived in a different time, and today halacha has changed. Rav Vazner, the Shevet Halevi, in his chiddush in Chelek Vav, Simon Koflam and Gimel disagrees. And Rav Vazner, and he's not the only one, by the way, there are a number of other poskim as well that side with this approach. Rav Waldemar, Tzitz Eliezer, also in one of his chiddush in Chelek Tess, also seems to go in this direction, at least when you don't have so much money. He says that, Rav Vazner says basically his language is, well, the Mechilas Kavodo, Rav Moshe, is a nice chiddush here, but I'm sorry, I just can't accept it, because the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach are the Makoros, and that's the end of the story. They don't really give you any types of limitations, any type of distinctions. The bottom line is, once Chazal made a takana that the halacha is the way that it is, and that you're allowed to support your children above age 6, then the halacha does not change. And that's the end of the story. And therefore, Rav Vosner is being makil in the situation that you could use maaser money to support your children over the age of 6, at least, at the very least, when you don't have so much money in the first place. That's, again, Rav Vosner's approach, which, again, is very, very interesting. My sense today is that most poskim, at least in America, and perhaps in Eretz Yisrael also, many poskim, at least when you have enough money, meaning you're not short of short in terms of finances, would say that the Rav Moshe approach is the approach to follow, both because, number one, we have Rav Moshe, as well as we have the Taz also not for the same reason, of course, but the Taz and a number of other Achronim also hold that that even if it might be tzedaka, you would not be allowed to use your maaser money for that. Yeah?
When Moshe's tshuva says, I'm assuming him.
Right.
What happens if they're living in the house? I mean, because of the B'nai Mishpacha, they get married, but they're still living in, like,
right.
He has no job.
Right.
He's getting married with no job,
right.
And they're living in his parents' house,
right.
Or her parents, whatever,
right.
It is.
The first question is, should he be getting married before he has a job?
Okay,
that's another story, right? Okay.
What does Rav Moshe say?
So I would guess, I'm not sure, but I would guess Rav Moshe would say that in that case, he still has an obligation to support her. Because he brings in this halacha of ola imo ve'ini yoredes imo, that the wife has to be able to go up. Again, we're not going to go into the whole context here, but basically, she has to go up with him and she doesn't go down with him, meaning that once she gets married to him, he has an obligation, as we see in the ksuba, he has a chiyuv to support her. So even if in this case the parents are taking care of that, but he still has that obligation to fulfill, and therefore it would seem that he can't use, I would think that according to Moshe, he cannot use maaser money in that case once they get married, regardless of the situation. That would be my perspective on Moshe. Again, it's not explicit, but I think that's what he would say.
It's considered to be tzedakah.
Again, only according to the Shach and the Beis Yosef and Rav Vosner, perhaps, at least when you're stuck with money. You don't have enough money. No. So basically what they would say is that you can use maaser money for your children, but even Rav Waldenberg, I don't remember what the Shevet HaLevi says, but even Rav Waldenberg in the Tzitz Eliezer, he says that he uses the expression of the Pasuk in Achrimos, of Al Yavo B'chol Yisrael HaKodesh, which in that context means that the Kohen Gadol can't go into the Kodesh Kodashim all year round. He comes in once a year. So that's the expression that many of the posts can use to say that even if you're allowed to use maaser money for these types of purposes, you shouldn't necessarily use your entire maaser money. On that, the Aruch HaShulchan has an interesting expression along those lines as well. He says, well, what's going to happen to the aniyim? Meaning, how are the poor people going to be supported if you end up spending all of your money on your children? So again, if your children really mamish have no money and this is the only way they're going to be supported, then there's what to talk about. But to say, l'chachilu, that I'm always going to use all of my maaser money to support my children, even according to the opinions that are, you know, perhaps that are makil, I don't think they would say that you should use all of your money on that all the time. I think they would say that you can use maybe some of it. But again, every case is a little bit different, and all, as we've said in previous weeks, it all depends on the individual situation, how much money you have, and the status of the kids, and especially in the case which posik you're following in the first place.
Does that mean, this is the other side of the coin now, does that mean that Rav Vosner, and I guess Rav Waldenberg, would they also hold, and we don't have the truth in front of us to answer, but you've seen it, would they hold that afilu bezman hazeh, one is not mechuyev to support children above the age of 6?
So that's a good question. Rav Vosner seems to be saying that you should do it, but it's not, I think he says, again, I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately. I don't think he says that that's something that you shouldn't do. You definitely should do it, but I don't know if he says that it's a halachic, an absolute halachic obligation. Meaning it's the kind of thing that, obviously, you need to support your family, but it's not something which you can put a specific halachic obligation to. Okay? Meaning, of course, he's going to say you should do it. It's, again, Waldenberg's tshuva I might have here. See if I can find it from here. But again, from what I remember, Rav Vosner's tshuva, we'll see in a second what he says about Limud HaTorah, okay, in terms of supporting your children that are studying Torah. I think it's a very similar concept. We'll see there also that it could be that even if you're not absolutely chayav to teach them Torah after a certain age or a certain point in their development, you still should do so, okay, based on a sort of a more general mitzvah. And I think he would say the same thing as this case as well, but again, I apologize, I don't have the tshuva in front of me, but it's a good point.
In many countries, or the law is that you have to support your children.
Good.
Okay. We're not speaking about a custom or that's
good.
What people do.
Good.
It's the law. So how can I call money which I spend because of the law
100%.
Can't be even according to those who
good.
Are Bachroikas with Rav Moshe. It's the law. So it's a chav. I can't
right.
count maaser for
good.
That.
Good. Okay. So the question is there. That's true that the
it's
Second?
It's not a Torah hof.
It doesn't change anything. Your tax point to the
right. Good question. Good question. Good question. Right, so they don't sort of.
Why should we affect the master? I understand. Why should we affect the
master? So basically, what
we said if there's a law in the country that you have to give a certain amount of money for Bituach Lomi, which goes to help poor people.
Yeah.
You can't use master money for it.
So we'll see, actually.
It goes for poor people, but that's the law. It's a chov. It's a debt you have, and we have seen that any debts which you have, you can't use master money for. In the same way,
if you stop supporting your children, they're not going to put you in jail.
Yes.
They probably will, no?
Yes, they will. There's a minimum amount which you have to give to your children until a certain age. If not, it's neglect, and they put you in jail.
Okay, this is the different countries. So we all come from different countries here. This is where we.
No,
I think
cultures,
I think in most of the countries they're such a law. No, I don't think it's I don't think they make so much of a difference. So that's a good point. I'm looking at the Rav Waldenberg tshuva right now. Rav Waldenberg, I do not see him addressing that point, which is an important hara. I don't know why he doesn't address it. He does not seem to. He discusses the question both of them studying Torah and paying for the kids studying Torah, and also for supporting the children. He does not discuss that part of the question. So I'll tell you my thoughts on it, just off the cuff, and have to evaluate whether my thoughts make sense or not. I would say that it's true that today the law requires you to support your children, so that would be a chova. One approach would be to say that definitely supports Rav Moshe's approach in this context, and you would say Einachanami. Now you're right. Once that's the law, that Dina D'machlus Adina applies, and you would have to support your children from that money, and that would be true according to L'chol Adeus. That's one approach you can take. That's definitely a legitimate approach. I think even in Rabbi Tao's book, I don't think he mentioned this either. Let's try another approach. Though the other approach could be that even though it's true that you have to support your children, they don't care what money you use to support your children. The only issue is going to be whether this is considered to be a davar shebechova. So a chova that we were talking about previously, the main discussion we had was about taxes. Can you use tax money, for maser money? And the answer in many cases was no. Again, we're talking, let's say, about some sort of arnona tax, a tax that's imposed on the person or on your property. Can you pay that tax with maser money? And the answer, generally speaking, was no. But that's an obligation that you have specifically to pay the government a certain amount of money. It could be that the obligation that you have to support your children is a general obligation, but it's not in the same context of a chov. Okay, could be that if the malchus, the government imposes that obligation on you, since you're not paying them directly, all they're telling you to do is to support your child, it could be that would not be, it's possible, again, this is my own speculation, I haven't seen this inside, but I haven't seen this issue discussed too much anyway. It could be that would you would say from that's not that's not the whole they're talking about anyway, in which case maybe some of those poskim would say that halachically you can use maser money for them. Again, that's a suggestion, I'm not sure, because he doesn't discuss it. I don't know what to say. Rabbi Taub here, when he discussed this point, I think Rabbi Taub actually avoided the issue completely, because Rabbi Taub just quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein and basically says we pass like Rav Moshe, that halacha is that today's times are different and therefore you have an obligation to support your kids, and that's the end of the story.
Isn't there a difference between what the government says for your kids versus the Torah say? Was the government saying just feed them so they have enough to sustain themselves and then
some
clothing, but maybe the Torah is saying no, you've got to have the Torah. Food. Torah.
The Torah we'll get to in a few minutes. We'll get to that.
The Torah definition of the family might be different to what the government is, and maybe there's a difference in that.
If anything, I would say the government would require you to give them more than the Torah. If anything.
Why not? Why?
Because the government would probably say that the Torah would say the minimum amount that they need to live would be good enough. And the government might say, I don't know what they say, I don't know what the rules are, how much money you have to pay. Right. You're right, it could be that there's a difference, but I'm not sure. How much of a difference there actually is. It's hard to know. Second?
Government would be more. You have to provide them with more clothing, I mean.
Right, that would be my guess. Being halacha would probably require you to provide them the absolute minimum. Not that you shouldn't provide more, but that the absolute minimum obligation would be to provide them a minimum amount of clothing. And again, understand where the Gemara is coming from. They didn't have 25 sets of clothes like we do today, that every year you're buying new clothing for your children. They had a few sets of clothing, and that was it. So, It's hard to say exactly, which one would be more, and certainly if the Chazal would say that it's more.
What do you say about the mitzvah? If you have a mitzvah, do you have to? What was the halacha there? What a mitzvah is that?
So we said a mitzvah chiyuv is an obligatory mitzvah you cannot use, according to most poskim, you cannot use aser money for. That's what we said.
Same concept with the chiyuv of the child.
Right, so that's what we said. If it's a halachic obligation, if it's a din of the malchus obligation, so that's the discussion here. Would you say that a obligation from the government is the same halachically in terms of this point of davar shebechova that you can't use maser for? And one possibility is the answer is absolutely yes, it's the same thing and you can't. And the other option was according to explain Rav Waldenberg and maybe Rav Vosner, you know, that don't address this point. They just say that, you know, it sounds like you can use maser money to support them. You know, maybe you would say
you have a that says you can, that you have to support them.
But that's not so clear. That's what we're saying. From the Gemara, it sounded like maybe over six you don't have to.
That's
how things are working around here. Okay. Yeah. Take it away. I'm sorry. I'll outline it for you later. I didn't have a chance to make an outline here. I apologize. We were going in circles, right? Rav Waldenberg. If anybody wants to hear Waldenberg's tshuva inside, I can show it to you afterwards. But again, I unfortunately did not see him address this point so much. Okay. We need to go on, unfortunately, in order to be able to at least get most of what we wanted to do tonight to get it done. Everybody agrees, according to Rav Taub, including Rav Moshe. Everybody basically agrees that. That once the child is at the point when they are married or they're already working, as we pointed out in Moshe, that's okay. Then you would be allowed to use maser money to support them, at least if you had in mind when you decided to support them that you were going to use maser money for that purpose. And this is very important, by the way, going back to what we said previously in previous weeks, that you should always make a tanai. You should have in mind that when you decide to give maser money for these different things, or even when you are a makabel upon yourself to begin with, the minhag of maser, that you're going to use your maser money for all these different kinds of variety of uses of purposes as well. Okay, let's go to the next closely related question, and that is the issue of tuition. Okay, can you use maser money to pay for tuition or other types of money to support your children that are in school or studying Torah? So this is a very, very interesting and, of course, a bit of a heated issue. The opinion of most poskim, and this is what all the practical svarim basically bring down from many, many different poskim, which I'll mention in a minute, but the consensus of most poskim is that you cannot use tuition, you cannot use maser money to pay for tuition. And the reason why is because a father has a biblical, or a chiyuv, basically a Torah obligation to teach your son Torah. That's clear from the Mishnah in source number 5, which you're probably all familiar with. The Mishnah Kiddushin says, "Av chayav v'no l'mulo l'dosa l'lamdo Torah." A father is obligated to give his son a bris milah, to give him a pinyon, a ben, and to teach him Torah. That is an obligation for every father on his children. Baruch Hashem, I think my father has fulfilled all these obligations. I hope, as far as I know.
At what point, you know?
Good. So we'll get to that. So based on this, it's clear that there is an obligation to teach the son Torah. According to this, most poskim say that therefore you cannot use tuition money to support your children. That is the opinion of, and I'll list you about 10 poskim here that mention this. So some to name a few: the Avas Chesed, which is the Chavetz Chaim in Perek Yud Tes, the Derech Amunah of Chaim Kanievsky in Perek Zion, the Igros Moshe in the Tshuva, which we'll see in just a minute, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Shevet Halevi in the same Tshuva that I mentioned before, which is in Chelek Hei, Siman Kuf Lamed Gimel, the Eliyahu Rava, Rav Shlomo Kluger, the Tshuvas Be'er Sheva. There are a lot of poskim. Basically, almost everybody agrees with this psak, and today's Taz Rabbi Taub definitely agrees with this as well. Rabbi Willig also agrees with this point. They point out also, Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Taub also point out that if you do not have enough money to pay for your kids' tuition, and again, this is more applicable obviously in Chutz La'aretz where you're paying more for your tuition than in Israel, but here also, if you don't have enough money to pay for your tuition and still, you know, be able to give maser, as we've discussed previously, and you all your other household expenses, then it's very well possible that you are pater from maser completely, meaning you are not obligated in whatever minhag of maser ksafim that you would like to do because you just simply do not have enough money. That's a very important point which needs to be discussed and evaluated on a very individual basis. That's an important point to take into account. Let's go through some of the other distinctions. Now, that's the basic rule, okay? That's the general rule of most poskim. There is a minority of poskim, quoted by the Sefer Maser Ksafim, which is this one here, by Rav Bronstein, I think his name is. So he quotes a minority who do allow, v'shas ha-dechak, who do allow you to pay tuition with maser money. He quotes the Sefer called the Meshiv Dvarim. He quotes the Rishon Lezion, which was written by the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, who basically say that at least specifically in a situation where the teacher is an ani, then you would be allowed to use maser money in that case. Today, of course, it's hard to know which teacher is considered to be an ani. Maybe the school is considered to be an ani. The schools all take thousands and thousands of dollars of tuition, at least in Chutz La'aretz, and yet they still say they don't have money. It's hard to know. And again, that would also only be able to be evaluated in a very, very individual case. It's hard to give general klolin. But again, just be aware there are some poskim that at least b'shas adchak would allow you, if the teacher isn't ani, to give master money.
When you say tuition, are you referring just to limud kodesh or limud kasha and limud echol?
Good question. Definitely limud echol according to this, and limud kodesh also according to most of these poskim. Meaning most of these poskim are going to say that you cannot use you can't use master money for tuition. If you're asking me about the minority who allows you to do so, is that what you're asking?
No.
No.
Those who say you can't use, can you use it for limud echol?
Absolutely. Yes. For sure not.
Why? Because
why not?
Yeah. Or you've got somewhat less of a chiyuv. Over here, okay, it's very clear that there's a chiyuv to teach Torah
and umanu.
Yes, swimming.
Right. So either way you look at it, I think you can't use it. In at least again for regular basic tuition for basic schooling. Either we say that you have a chiyuv, which the rest of that mission there, which I didn't quote here. I think it's not the mission. It's in the Brisa and the Gemara there. But it's a similar point. Do you need a sheet, by the way? I have extra sheets. So they say that there is an obligation to teach your child a trade, which bismanazab l'chora means that you've got to send them to school in order so that they can learn a trade. Not that everybody who goes to school learns a trade necessarily, but at least you got to start somewhere, right? So usually it's assumed that you have to, in order to help them learn a trade, you got to send them to school. And the other approach is, even if you say that we don't look at that, or that's not exactly how you would do it, but still, at the end of the day, the main usage of Maser Ksafim is for tzedakah or for Talmud Torah. And in this case, to send the kids to school doesn't necessarily qualify for either one of them. So l'chora, I think that in most normal situations, for regular schooling, we wouldn't say that you can use Maser money for that either.
In England, it's generally very, very accepted to use Maser Ksafim for school for limud kodesh.
Oh, well, one second, we didn't finish yet. Okay,
sorry.
We didn't finish yet.
Okay.
Again, I would like to hear some actual names of rabbis that do that. And there are, Mika Levi is quoting from other rabbis, but to find out who. Let me tell you what I think that it might be based on. But again, if you ask me, unfortunately, my rabbis have not been makel in this regard in most situations. They would prefer to say that you're potter from maaser bechlal if you don't have enough money to pay tuition and pay for your regular expenses and to give maaser at the same time. That's most.
Rav Shefter said that.
So Rav Willig, I know, said that. I believe Rav Shefter holds the same way. Again, I didn't hear it mefurish from him on any of the recordings, the shiur on Yud Torah that I tried to listen to, having to do with maaser. But I believe that he's got a shiur on Yud Torah about maaser ksafim, about tzedakah. I believe that he also holds the same way. I believe. Okay. I also think that Rav Willig wouldn't say something against Rav Shefter without quoting Rav Shefter that he disagrees.
Since he's from all these maflekas, if a person wasn't from or was from, was ignorant in Marco, when they passed away at age 120,
yeah,
you know, he would be he did say he didn't give any master whatsoever.
Right.
But it looks like there's a lot of areas where he could have. Just saying all these things that you're discussing,
right.
He could have given master even though he didn't think to give master.
Even though he didn't realize he was giving, but he was.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's a lot of opportunities. I'm saying, well, from what you're saying,
right. So the problem is, well, number one, it could be that he never accepted upon himself. Again, we discussed that there's not an absolute chiyuv to give master something. It's according to most poskim is a minhag. So if that's the case, you usually have to accept upon yourself that you're going to keep that minhag. And once you do that, you have to accept upon yourself that you're using your maser money for all these different purposes. Meaning, if you didn't have in mind that you're using that, I don't know if it would count. So at the end of the year, at the end of the day, you know, in Shemayim, did he get brownie points for, you know, did he get sechuyos for doing this? I can't tell you. I don't know. My guess would be that not necessarily, if that's not what he had in mind by doing so. Again, it's a guess.
It's not going to hurt him.
It's not going to hurt him, for sure it won't hurt him. I hope it won't hurt him. Okay, we have to go on, I'm sorry, we have to continue moving here. Well, after the next section, maybe we can take another question or two. There is a bit of a discussion, and this is where some of the kulos perhaps come from, in terms of how much do you actually have to teach your child when it comes to Limud Torah. So this, unfortunately, did not get on the source sheet, but the Shulchan Aruch does exist. Unfortunately, right now it's covered with a little bit of soda here, the soda that I spilled in the Shulchan Aruch before. But the Shulchan Aruch does say, in Siman Reish Mem Hei, and Siman Reish Mem Bav, discusses what your obligation to teach your child Torah is. Basically, the main obligation is to teach your child Mikra, to teach your child Chumash, and that is the main obligation that you have to pay for a teacher to teach them. According to that, it seems to be that perhaps you can say that to teach your child Torah Shebaal Peh, Mishnah and Gemara, you might be that might not be an absolute chiyuv, and therefore it stands to reason that perhaps you could use maaser money for teaching your kids Torah Shebaal Peh. That is indeed the shita of the pre-Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Blazer. He seems to say that that's the case. It's in Chelek Beis somewhere or other, some Chav Zayin. He seems to say you can use maaser money for Torah Shebaal Peh. Rav Waldberg and the Tzitz of Liazor, and the same tshuva over here also, wants to say that, again, if you're stuck, if you have a Shas HaDachak and you don't have enough money, it could be that for teaching children Torah Shebaal Peh, which in many many places and for certain ages is maybe even the primary topic of study that you're learning in school, there might be room to be a little bit more Mekil. The Shevet HaLevi in the same tshuva I mentioned before, Rav Vosner, wants to be machmer here. And his basic idea is that even if there's not an absolute chiyuv to pay with your own money to fulfill the mitzvah of teaching your child Torah, but you still have a general mitzvah of lumadat musam es b'neichem, that you have to teach your children Torah based on that pasuk. And he says that mitzvah applies also for Torah Shebaal Peh, and that of course is actually based on the Shulchan Aruch that I gave you before. That same Shulchan Aruch basically says that if you have enough money, I'll read it to you on the side, basically says that if you do have enough money, if you're able to, then you really are supposed to teach your child Torah Shebaal Peh as well.
So
he says,
second? He mentioned two
Yeah, so basically what he wants to say, though,
you should, it's a mitzvah if you're doing it.
So again, he says, he says here that you should indeed, that if you have enough money, then you are supposed to support, you are supposed to teach for Torah Shebaal Peh also, but it's not necessarily an absolute chiyuv. So basically what Rav Vosner here is, he says that if the minhag in the city is that you have to pay money to teach their, you know, to get the melamed to teach your child, then you have to teach him you have to pay the money for that until he can read all of Torah Shebichtav. Okay, very interesting. We don't really do that today, but that's what they mean by mikra. Ve'enu chayv lalando b'schar mishnah gemara. Okay, you are not obligated to teach your child by paying money, you know, mishnah gemara, to actually pay money for it. Bahani mila, that only applies to lo efshar, that it's impossible to dechik le shata, that you don't have enough money. Aval im efshar le, but if it is possible to teach your child and to pay for it, mitzvah la'agmure mishnah gemara. There is a mitzvah to teach your child mishnah gemara halachos v'agados. So the question is how seriously do you take that mitzvah? Rav Vosner wants to say, and many of the posts can follow this, that that mitzvah means that if you're able to, and if you have enough money, then absolutely you should be paying to teach your child Torah Shebaal Peh, and therefore you cannot use mass money for that obligation. Again, if you don't have enough money, then it definitely seems to be from these tshuvas that there is room to be mekil. Again, not everybody would agree to that, as we mentioned before, but at least according to some shitas, there is a little more room to be mekil in this type of context. That's basically the shita of the Rav Vosner.
What about everything you teach the child before he's able to learn mikra? You're teaching him
like
Aleph Beis.
I think
you're
I would say
him,
right.
You're teaching him about Chagim, about Shabbos,
right.
About
right.
all the stuff which they learn before they
good question. Good question. If that's something that you need in order to learn Chumash, I mean, in the Aleph Beis, I would have to say the Torah is included, because you cannot learn Chumash without learning Aleph Beis. Okay, you can't learn all of Chumash unless you know how to read. Okay, what'd you say?
Greek,
right? Hanukkah's over already. anything else, other types of chagim and other things like that, I would say that, again, I'm not sure about this, but I would say that it could be that would fall in the same category as the rest of the Torah Shebaal Peh stuff. Meaning it's things which are not the absolute obligation of mikra, but things that are, you know, still included in the general category of learning Torah that you have a mitzvah to do. Now, very, very important point. That is all according to the strict Iker Hadin here. And that is what many of the poskim that in different places that are more makil for Masar Ksaf and for tuition, that's probably what most of them are based on, I would guess, I should say. Today, Rav Moshe has another very, very important shuva here. If you look at, where did my source go? Rav Moshe is in source number 6. Okay, very, very important shuva. He says here, okay, that's very, very nice. Okay, but who exactly do you have a chiyuv to teach in terms of your children? You have a chiyuv to teach your male children, but whoever said that you have a chiyuv to teach your female children? Look at source number 6. Kinei v'davar im rashai l'shalim s'char limud habonos b'beis ha-sefer. Shenikra beis Yaakov imos maser. Can you use maser money to pay for your daughters to go to school? Because they don't have to be taught. I mean, at least the chiyuv is that they don't have to be taught. Vada ish chiluk bein banam l'banos. He says, definitely it's true that there is a distinction. Midina, according to the strict halacha. To lilmod mikra ha-chayav av l'lamed l'vadav apischar. Because as we said before, to teach your sons, you got to teach them chumash, even if you have to pay for it. And therefore it becomes a darash of a chova that you cannot use maser money for. And here we see clearly Rav Moshe holds you cannot pay tuition money with maser money, as we said before. It's not an obligation. If there would be a need, then it would be possible to pay maser money. In our country, in America, that you are obligated according to the government law. This may actually have implications also for the discussion we had before about even the Malchusa. It could be that Rav Moshe would weigh in on that question as well. You'll have to think about how that would work yourselves. But basically, in this case, he says, because the government says that you have to send your daughters to school, that Hashem's chesed has allowed us to send the girls to, not necessarily to public school, but rather to yeshiva, or to whatever types of Beis Yaakovs they're sending them to, that are run, hopefully, by from religious God-fearing Jews. If you don't send your kid to a religious school, the Chadoma, of course, will add in, you know, all the Shalamuses and the Flatbushes and the Ramazes and the Hasmos in England and Emmanuel and all those other schools.
Don't forget,
I don't
Hank.
Know. Say it? Hank. Don't forget Hank. I won't. All right, then South Africa, I don't know whether the Yeshiva College, whatever it's called, right? We'll include all those. We'll take the liberal view of Rav Moshe's V'chadoma here. But assuming that those are all included, is Chanech Shem Derech HaTorah V'Hamunah, that you need to teach your daughters the Derech HaTorah and Amunah and Yirah Shemayim V'Shmiras HaMitzvos. You have to. It'll be. You will need to send them to the public schools if you do not send them to yeshiva. Shuchas v'shalom lo tarav lo amuna. They will obviously not get those Jewish values in the public school. Shizem mechuyav gam liro shetia bito kshera lahamin ba'ashem v'saraso ulekayim kol mitzvosav achot tzas mamon. Certainly, in that situation, he says that that you want your daughter to be an upstanding Jew. Therefore, you would have to send your child to the Jewish school. But therefore, there's no question of that. You are obligated to send your child to the Jewish school, and therefore, that's darash v'chov. You cannot use master money for tuition. Let's just finish the Rav Moshe Tshuva, and then we'll discuss the way that it applies perhaps a little differently in Eretz Yisrael. This is a very important point. Rav Moshe at the end of this tshuva, he says, but Mr. whoever he wrote the tshuva to here, which I forgot who it was, I don't think we have it on our source sheet, but in the actual tshuva, he says, but it seems from the cheshbon of what you told me, how much money you're making, how much money you got to spend on all of your different things, it's clear that you're making less money than your expenses. That you're potter from maser kesefim bichlal. That your own parnasa precedes everybody else. As the Ramah says, we've discussed previously, and therefore in our case we won't read the last line. Basically, he says you should spend your money on the hotzas b'nei beis. Do not use maser money for other purposes. That's only a midas chasidus. Make sure that your own family is taken care of first. You are potter from maser. That is Rav Moshe's tshuva, which I think really, at least in Chutz Laaretz, definitely should carry the day, and that is absolutely makes a lot of sense. Now that's going to be
following the same shita as you said previously about children over six. He said it's true that the din is like this,
excellent,
but
Einenu
Ro'ah, that the custom now is this, so it changed. So would it be fair to say that those who are machlokas with him regarding children about six would be machlokas with him?
Yeah. Okay, good. So let's look at Vazner and source number 7 and Shevet Halevi from the same tshuva. He says, "V'mikol makom masha inu gelam zonos el eschar milomdes lebanim af agav shem kfar begeder torah shabal peh v'al piyam mevur v'shochanaf yordias and reish memvav." I'm sorry, this is the same tshuva I mentioned before. I apologize. Now I'll read it inside. Basically, he says that in this case, you absolutely must pay for your children's Talmud Torah, even if they are a little bit older, because you should teach them Torah Shabbat as well. Therefore, he says you cannot use master money for that. That's really the one we had before. What I meant to say now is that Rav Vosner in that same tshuva also discusses the question of the daughters. And Rav Vosner actually disagrees here with Rav Moshe as well. And Rav Vosner wants to say that Enachanami, actually maybe it wasn't Rav Vosner, maybe it was the Minchas Yitzchak. I think it was the Minchas Yitzchak, actually, I apologize. Maybe Rav Vosner said so as well. But the Minchas Yitzchak definitely said so. That to teach your daughters for master money would absolutely be something which would be allowed, because you're not obligated to teach your daughter's Torah. That is Minchas Yitzchak and Tshuva Chelag Yud Siman Pehe. In Rav Waldenberg, by the way, also in the same Tshuva, in the Sitz Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg also wants to say, at least at the very least, when you don't have so much money, he wants to say that there's room to allow your daughters to go to school using maaser money for similar logic as we mentioned. And also he says once you're allowed to give maaser money for the over six, Kol Shekin, you should be allowed to do it for sending them to school. Now, how would this apply in Eretz Yisrael today? So this is the question. In Eretz Yisrael today, how would we apply Rav Moshe's tshuva? This is a question. Meaning, today you want your child to be sent to a good school. Okay? It could be that you could find certain schools out there that are not religious at all. They're not even Maman schools that perhaps, let's say, you can get by without any without paying as much money. And even, you know, the Maman schools, you don't pay so much money for it, but you pay a little bit. You pay a little bit of money. Is it completely free? Or you have to pay, everybody has to pay at least a little bit. A little bit, right? You pay a little bit. Okay. So I would say that, you know, certainly that it makes sense to reason that if you're machmir, that you cannot, normally like with Moshe, that you cannot pay tuition for whatever reason from master money, that in Eretz Yisrael also you would not be allowed to pay the base tuition for any religious school from master money. Now, this will have different connotations depending on which category of religious you place yourself. If you're Mamlachti Dati, so then presumably you got to send your kid to a Mamlachti Dati school. You can't send your kid to a Stam public school for the same concerns that Rav Moshe brings up, that even if it's a Jewish school, but they don't teach the kids any Torah, the kids are crazy, you know, you're not going to get anything out of it. So it's not, you can't do that. You got to send your kids to a religious school. Question is going to be, which we'll discuss in a minute, what if you can't send your kid to a more religious school? If you're Haredi, so for a Haredi family to send their kid to a base Mamlachti Dati school and not pay any extra tuition, I think in the Haredi world they would say also that you can't do that. Your kid will not come out from, because your kid will come out to be Zionistic and your kid will come out to not be Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Again, I'm not saying that's true, obviously. That's another discussion for another shir. But in their minds, I think it would be clear that they would say you can't do that, and Moshe's considerations, according to them, would apply there also. And therefore, if you take Moshe's approach in the Haredi lifestyle, you'd have to say you got to spend the money to send your kids to a real yeshiva. Again, the Haredi post, of course, didn't say that. Rav Vosner and Waldenberg seem to say that there's room to rely on the other sheets as before, either the Torah Shebaal Peh Shita, or at least for the girls to Beis Yaakov, there's room to be Megill. So again, every case is a little bit different. Every person is individual, and every community is a little bit different, and there are obviously machlokas and poskim about this. So it's hard to give any absolute claw in here. Let's continue.
Well,
yeah.
Non-Haredi people sending their kids to Haredi schools, the same might
But the Haredi schools probably cost a little bit more money than, meaning you don't get paid by the government as much as you pay for the
Mahmoud. You might be worried that your kids might be taught heresy.
Okay, so I'll reserve comment on that one. I want to keep my good.
Does it only work in one direction?
I want to keep my good standing in the Haredi world, so I'm not going to make any comments about that. It depends on the context. If you really believe that, then Eina Chanami, I would agree with what you're saying. If you really, really, honestly believe that, then yes, I would agree with that. Okay, we're not done yet. Here we have a couple more points.
Okay.
Yeah. Give me a few more minutes. We have to finish up soon anyway, and I have a couple more points to mention about this very quickly. Post-high school yeshiva. Let's say you're past high school already. Now you're up to the point
Army.
Of... right. Okay, so let's say you're doing Hezder.
We're good.
Let's say you're doing Hezder or other places. You're sending your kids to yeshiva.
You pay
Hezder? Yeah, you pay a little. Not a lot.
Why
a little bit. Got to pay a little bit. Or you're sending kids to... What? Yeah, all these kinds, all the programs they have today in Eretz Yisrael for learning after high school, and the same thing would apply in Chutz La'aretz as well. So in that case, can you pay master money to send your kids to yeshiva? So the answer here seems to be more lenient, according to many poskim, because they would say that at that age, according to many, there's no absolute chiyuv to teach your kids anymore. By that point, they may not know Kol HaTorah Kula Baal Peh unless they went to Zilberman's, but at least they've, you know, you've sent them to elementary school, you've sent them to, they know how to learn by themselves, hopefully, or at least well enough that, you know, that you would not have an obligation, according to many poskim, to teach them at that point. And therefore, according to many poskim, including the Priyatzchak we mentioned before, which we already said anyway would have been making even earlier, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, other poskim, Rabbi Taub in the English book, Rabbi Willig also was willing to be making ill here, that you can indeed use matzah money to send your kids to certainly for girls and probably even for boys as well to yeshiva after high school because you don't have an obligation to teach them anymore. Rabbi Willig, I believe on his shiur on Yatar, I believe he wanted to say that at least in certain situations you may be able to include graduate school as well. Okay, that also may be included for the same idea because sending your kids have to get a parnasa, they have to learn a trade. In order to do that, if they have to go to graduate school or at least to college, then it could be also that you're allowed to use master money for that. However, Rabbi Willig pointed out, as we mentioned before, that you should be careful. You can't spend all of your master money on your children for these kinds of things, for sending them to yeshiva, because of the fact that if you do that, then there's not going to be any masir money left for the aniyim. You have to be very careful about how you use it. Other postmen disagree. Rav Vosner, as we mentioned before, Rav Vosner still holds that after high school, there's still some sort of concept of limanafim esamas b'neichem, an obligation to teach your kids Torah, and therefore he says, at least when you're able to, you should not use masir money for that. If it's a shas l'dechak, again, if you don't have enough money, so again, there's more to talk about. There's room to be a little bit more makil. The only thing they say, they point out also, is that even if you're being makil, you should be careful to deduct however much money you would pay if they were at home. If they were at home, so that goes back to our question before. If you're obligated to support them when they're at home before they have a job, then you would have to deduct that amount that you would have supported them at home anyway from the amount that you're paying for them to have a dormitory and food in the yeshiva wherever they are. A couple other points about quickly about the yeshiva and the schooling. So in terms of getting a private tutor, so that's also a very, very interesting question. Most poskim say that if you need the tutor in order to keep up with the regular pace of the class, that's the same thing as the regular schooling, and therefore if we're machmer in general, you'd have to be machmer as well to not use master money for that. But if it's extra, if it's an extra tutor to be able to get him, you know, a little bit more advanced, then already some poskim, this I saw in Rabbi Tal's book from quoted from Rabbi Yoshev, that you would be allowed to use master money in that situation because it's not part of your regular obligation to teach your child Torah at the regular pace of that class. One very, very important final point here. Let's say that you could have sent your kids to a Mamalti Dati school. Okay, let's say in our context, in Yad Binyamin. So you could have sent your kids to Breuer. Okay, nice, fine, religious school. They do learn a little bit of Torah there. What? What did I say? Oh, I'm sorry. Mamalti Dati Torani school, excuse me. And instead, you choose to send your kids to a slightly more intense Torah environment, such as Torah HaChaim or Yesodot or any other school that you might be able to think of. The question is, in that case, can you use master money for that? So that, the master Ksafim Sefer quotes a number of postcase money. He doesn't say who they are, but at least anonymously, they want to say, Rabbi Willig also is willing to say this as well, that you can indeed use master money for the difference between the base amount you would pay for the base education and how much extra you're paying for the extra more intense Torah schooling that you chose for your children. That would be perhaps another Ofen Lahakil in this type of situation.
My understanding is that Yisodot is the same exact price, including the buses, as Breuer.
No, but don't forget, we just said
Breuer as a Torani. You may also be able to go down to Amapati school without, and then the difference between that and Breuer, you might have a difference.
For that, you have to be careful because the regular Mamalti Dati schools, I don't know if you can say that you're allowed to send your kids there if it's not a Torah. They don't learn any Torah there at all. I don't know. I would be hesitant to say that. Okay, it's 10:30. I have a few more points here. If you don't mind, I would like to finish up this topic. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind, give me another 10 minutes or so. If you need to leave, you're more than welcome to leave. I won't hold it against you.
Do shul membership?
Yes, that's why I wanted to do shul memberships, and then the question of Shiuri Torah and taxes. Those are the three questions I want to cover quickly in the next 10 minutes. If we don't have too many questions, we'll see what we can do very, very quickly. All the questions will have to wait till the end. Okay. Shul costs. So can you use master money for shul memberships and things like that? So this is a very, very interesting and important question as well. The post can debate this as well. The first thing that I found in terms of regular dues, so can you pay regular dues membership from master money? So the poskim that I saw in Rabbi Taub, as well as in the Master Ksafim Sefer in Hebrew, they quote a number of poskim that basically say that you're not allowed in general. Again, at least when you have enough money, or even maybe even completely, like in any situation, you're not allowed to use master money for those types of things. And the reason why, and this is a very important point, they say the reason why you're not allowed to is because you get some sort of hana from your membership. What is the hana you get from your membership? Either it means that you get seats, or it means you get aliyahs, or you get other types of benefits from your membership. And therefore, the way that it's quoted, I think, in one of the sermons from Jakob Kamenetsky, is that it's considered to be similar to Mekachul Memkar. It's considered like a deal. You make a deal. You pay money, and you get something in return. Therefore, he wants to say that that is not something that you can use master from in that situation. Now, the truth is, if you think about it very carefully, and depending on the situation and the shul and the environment, it could be that you can start to poke holes in that sfar a little bit. Could be that when you get, when you become a member, so you have to figure out exactly what your membership is, what is your membership giving you. If it's giving you a seat that ain't a chanami, then you probably have to agree that that's not something that you can use master money for, especially if you consider davar shebechova. If you need to go to that shul and you need to have a seat, and the only way you can do that is to pay money for it, I think we would agree that it's a davar shebechova that you probably can't use master money for that, according to most poskim. However, if you become a member for a shul because you want to donate money to that shul and you don't really get very much in return, or you don't really care very much about what you get in return, it could be that you could be more makil. I found in Rabbi Tal's book, he quotes Rav Belsky, Yisrael Belsky, from who works at the OU and in Torah Vadas, Rebelski apparently, and other postmen also, felt that you can use at least a section, a portion of your membership money for to be used for master money. They felt it was somewhere between one third and one half, meaning whatever master, whatever money goes specifically to the shul that is not being going to your personal needs that you're getting out of that, it could be however much money that is, that would be allowed to be used for master money. We'll have to talk to the people on, that are on the bottom, different shuls here, to give us a little more of exactly how the breakdown works.
I can tell you don't get any benefits.
Okay, so very good. All right. So, we're in the first tier.
We're in the first tier. You should be allowed to use your master.
Would you have said that even before I told you this halacha about the benefits point?
Yeah.
You would have said that. Okay. So again, if anything that any money.
What does it cover?
Right.
It doesn't cover anything. It's a responsibility, not a.
Right.
Not
good.
What do you do with the money?
Shul, if you use it, right.
You're upkeeping the shul, which I need. I need the upkeep of the shul. I profit from the cleaning, which
that's
there
not,
is in the shul.
Yeah.
I profit from
so
the electricity.
I don't think that's what they're talking
so
about.
So the air person doesn't pay also.
What?
So if
right.
Doesn't pay also,
I mean, if you don't pay, you can still profit from those things. You can still, they don't, not allow you, at least last time I checked in Shari Tila, and even in the Merkaz Ishul, I don't think they prohibit you from walking in if you didn't pay your dues.
I think. No, but it
does. I'm joking. I'm saying, Dad, you can't use the seat, right?
That's so crazy.
You could walk in, they had the most shoes
but
you can't say that you don't profit from it.
What we mean here is a direct benefit that you get from your money, meaning that you only can get an aliyah because you're a member. You can only get a seat. You can only get other benefits that are only privileges of members and not of anybody else. That's the question. Again, I don't have time to go into this more right now, but basically, according to what they're saying, however much money you are paying that does not give you direct benefits from being a member, that money would be allowed to come from Maser money. In every case, you have to determine exactly how much that is. Another point is that if you could have gone to a cheaper shul and you choose to go to a more expensive shul for, again, not for specific benefits that they give you that are direct benefits, it could be that also can you can use Maser money for, as well as the point that Mishana said, the Chak, it could be that if you have no other way of giving money, it could be, again, individual situations, but could be that you're allowed to as well to use master money in that type of situation.
My point is that the Yontov seats are cheaper because you're a member.
Say again?
The Yontov seats are cheaper.
Good, so again, those types of...
Right. Because you're paying membership.
Good, okay, so that you have to talk about. The whatever base money you give in order to get a seat for Yamim Noroyim, for example, probably cannot be used for master money because of the fact that you need that seat. If you don't buy the seat, you won't have a place to sit. And I think that most postmen would say that you cannot use that.
And everybody needs me.
All right.
No,
what
I'm saying, if you pay the membership during the year, when it comes to paying for the minimum rent, you actually get a cheaper rate.
Good. So it could be that the...
The difference.
Right. It could be that the difference you could talk about. Maybe. We'll have to think about that.
What about if I want to make a kiddush? Can I use my master money to sponsor a kiddush?
Good question.
You don't have to benefit from that.
Basically, the postmen say that other types of operating costs that helps the shul to run. Many poskim do say that if it's a donation that you would be allowed to use master money for. If it's the kind of thing that, you know, that the kiddush is an essential part of the shul that encourages people to come and is part of, you know, shul operating costs, and maybe my father can give me a better answer because he was a shul rabbi for many years, I would venture to say that there's room to allow you to use master money for those types of costs. Agree?
I would agree, but it also depends how the shul defines himself in Rav Ozarowski. I can say that to you. Defined it for us a few minutes ago. It depends on whether the shul is actually selling a seat, which is one category, or not. I mean, the shul that we go to now in Chicago actually sends out a letter every year saying that, quote unquote, no goods or services were given in return for this membership, or for this money. Which means by the halacha of the IRS in the United States, there is no hanah, so to speak. And according to some poskim lahavdil among the accountants in the U.S., you would be allowed to take that off your taxes as charitable donation. So it's a whole other spin on it that
falls right
into this.
Right, that's another important point. The Minchas Yitzchak actually has a tshuva about that question, but the shul seats. He wants to say that if you actually bought the seat, if you actually have the real physical rights to the seat, you cannot use master money for that because it's a sale. You bought it. Other cases, if you didn't actually buy it, then again, there's more room to talk about. There's more room to play with.
No, but
and
you buy it more than its cost because
that's also Eidachanami. So again, that also could be playing in here. That at least the difference, even if you buy the seat for less money, at least the difference in cost between how much it was worth and how much you paid also could be perhaps be used for
master money. Say again.
I wanted to add in a number of points concerning the shear that we had previously. Just a couple questions that came up during the shiur that I wanted to focus on just briefly as an addendum right now. The first question that we mentioned was the question, the discussion in the Gemara about what point are you chayav to support your children. And just again, just to review the Gemara again, the Gemara seems to say on Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis in Ksubos that there is definitely an obligation to support your children when they are under the age of 6. And just wanted to add on this point that the basis for this is a bit of a dispute in the Mefarshim, whether this is Ichiyuv Dorais or Darabanan. The Otzar Poskim in Evan HaEzer Siman Ayin Aleph, which actually is where the Shulchan Aruch Paskins these halachas about supporting your children, discusses some achronim that want to say that according to the Rambam, the Ichiyuv is actually Doraisa to support your children, and other Mefarshim say that the Chiyuv is only Durabanan, but that's where the halachas get quoted in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Ayin Aleph, in Evan HaEzer Sif Aleph. Above the age of 6, we discussed in the Shir, it may not be an absolute chiyuv of support. So again, just to reiterate, the Gemara in Ksubos there, Daf Mem Tes and Daf Nun, seems to say that there was a takana from Usha that they actually were supposed to support their children above the age of 6, but at the end the Gemara seems to reject that idea that it's a takana. Perhaps at the end of the day it's not actually a takana, it's something which was encouraged but not absolutely required. The language of the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Ayin Aleph in Evan HaEzer does seem to imply that it was a takana. The language of the Shulchan Aruch is that there was a takanas chachamim to support your children. It says, Chayav Adam Lazun Banavu Benosav Ad Shiyu Bnei Sheish. And after their sheish, b'nei sheish, above age 6, misham v'yelech zanon k'takanas chachamim. You should support them like the takanas chachamim until they grow up. But the Be'er Hagra and many other mefarshim say that that's really an inaccurate usage, because the language of the Gemara, the conclusion of the Gemara, seemed to be that you would not actually have a chiyuv takanas chachamim to support them, and the only status that it would have is something which is strongly encouraged. And the Shulchan Aruch itself, based on the Gemara over there, actually says that if you do not want to support them, im lo rotza goarin bo, you harangue him, you yell at him, machlimino, so you embarrass him, potzrin bo, im lo rotza machrizin alav betzibor, you even would announce his name in public and say that he's wicked and he does not want to support his children. So clearly, even if it's not an absolute chiyuv of takanas chachamim, clearly the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch have very harsh words for somebody who does not support their child above the age of 6. This is very, very relevant to the question we discussed in the Shir about supporting them with maser money. So we mentioned that a number of the poskim, the Shevet Halevi and others, held that you would be allowed to use maser money to support your children above the age of 6. And the question was asked, well, if that's true, does that mean that there's a chiyuv to support them at all? Which was a good question. And the answer is, even if you say that you can use maser money, there's still absolutely some sort of obligation or strong encouragement to support them above the age of 6, as evidenced by the language of the Shulchan Aruch in this case here in Siman Ayin Aleph Sif Aleph. Okay. In terms of today, so support today, so far we've mentioned a number of points. One other point which is important to mention as well is that the Gemara there in Ksubos, followed by the Shulchan Aruch, limits the discussion of when you're not chayev to a case where it's eno amid. But if you're amid, then you are chayev. Amid, by according to the Mefarshim, seems to me that you're wealthy, that you are, I don't know if we should use the word rich, but you have a significant amount of money. And if you do, then you actually have an obligation to support them, and we actually can be kofe you, we can force you to take your money and use it to support your children. Now, there's a question of exactly what is considered to be amid vizan hazeh, but suffice it to say that most people today do have enough money to be considered amid. The Otzar Poskim in Siman Ayin Aleph discusses this point a little bit as well, but again, that's another reason why we might say that today perhaps you do have some sort of obligation to support your children. There's another important point mentioned by the Otzar HaPoskim in Siman Ayin Aleph, and that is that that the Rabbanut HaRashit, actually, in the year of Tafshin Dalad, which was about 65 years ago, made a takana. The two Rabbanim HaRashim at the time, Rav Herzog and Rav Uziel, made a takana that that a father has an absolute obligation, a chiyuv mishpati gamur, to support his children above age 6. Even though up till that point, there may not have been a chiyuv gamur, as we discussed. From that point on, according to this takana of the Rabbanim HaRashim, fathers absolutely have an obligation to support their children above the age of 6. And the Otzar HaPoskim discusses the responses to that takana and different achronim that discussed it, but it definitely seems to have been widely accepted by at least a certain segment of Poskim as discussed over there. So that's another important addendum. Another point that we mentioned during this year, a question of the Dina de Machlus Adina, when the law requires you to support your children, so how does that impact our halachos? So again, if you see from the Takana of the Rabbanim HaRashit that they were uncomfortable with saying that you do not have to support your children, and they actually made it this Takana into a legal obligation, both in terms of the halacha as well as we already know that there would be in the secular realm that there is such an obligation. So that's an important aspect to that question also of the Dina de Machlus Adina. At the time in the shir, we also mentioned the suggestion that that would support Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe had said that today everybody would agree that you do have to support your children because that's what's done. So certainly Dina de Machlus Adina would further that. The other suggestion we made in the shir was that the government would not require it as a chov to you. We discussed the idea that since you do not pay the government directly, perhaps it's not considered to be a real chov. So the truth is, at this point, is not exactly correct the way that we discussed it in the shir. Based on what the poskim say in Hilchos Tzedakah, which we also mentioned previously, it seems that anything which is a chov that you are obligated to pay cannot serve as a chiyuv maaser. So even though in this case you're not actually paying the government, you're giving the money directly to the children or to the family, so that you can support them. But since it's some sort of chov, it's a chov you're obligated to do something with the money to pay them, even if it doesn't go directly to the government, presumably, we would still say that's considered to be a davar shebechova, that if you're obligated, you cannot spend the money from maaser money. The other option to explain this point about Dina de Machlus Adina is could be that we don't necessarily require you, we don't necessarily say that Dina de Machlus Adina applies in a situation where the halacha is not about giving taxes to the government directly. Meaning, Dina de Machlus Adina requires you to give taxes to the government. Dina de Machlus Adina does not necessarily require you to do other types of actions, other types of legal actions, which are important. So an example might be zoning laws, perhaps traffic regulations, which again are important, and they may be issues of pikuach nefesh, but in terms of the Dina de Machlus Adina of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, it could be, according to some opinions, that that's not included because it's not talking about giving money to the government. There is an unpublished tshuva from Eretz Chemda in Yerushalayim, which also discusses this question, and they suggest this possibility that according to some it may not be included in Dina de Machlus Adina here as well, since the obligation the government is just saying that you should support your children, perhaps that's not included in the strict concept of Dina de Machlus Adina. One other question that was mentioned during this shir, which we could just address very briefly now, not a complete answer, but again just to revisit the question. The question was asked about a single mother. Does a single mother have an obligation to support her children? And thus the question would be, if she doesn't, can she support her children with maaser money? So from the traditional poskim and the traditional sources, it seems to be that a mother does not have an obligation to support her child, both while she's married as well as while she's divorced or widowed. It seems to be that the husband is definitely the one that has the obligation to support his children. Either the children are through this obligation to support his wife or separately. It seems pretty clear that the wife does not have any obligation to support her children. This is evidenced if you look in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Pei Beis, The Shulchan Aruch Siman Pei Beis discusses the question of the children. This is based on the Gemara Ksuvos stuff, I think Daf Kuf Beis, that she can take the child when the child is very, very young, and the husband may be required, until the age of six, the husband may be required to pay to support the child when the child is with the mother. Let's say that the parents are divorced, so at least up till age six, the husband may have a chiv to support the child that's together with the wife, as discussed in the Shulchan Aruch at that point. Perhaps over the age of six, that's a question. Maybe over the age of six, he does a chiv to support her according to the strict rules of the Shulchan Aruch. But it's clear from there that the mother herself does not necessarily have a halachic obligation to support her children, and that rather the husband, whatever chiv the husband has to support his wife, even when they're divorced, may include also supporting the children. The Otzar HaPoskim also discusses this point very briefly. The Otzar HaPoskim discusses a case where she supported her children out of the goodness of her heart, and then afterwards she wants to go back to the husband to claim some of the money from him that he should reimburse her for what she's done. So he discusses a number of the achronim that discuss this question. This is also in Siman Ayin Aleph. And again, some of them say that maybe she can actually get the money back from him, maybe she can't, depending on exactly how she did it. But it seems clear from all of the discussions here that they discuss there also the idea of poreach chovo, that she is considered to be like paying somebody else's debt in the process. But again, it doesn't seem to be at all that the wife is obligated to support her children, even if the husband is not supporting them. It does not seem like the wife is obligated to support her children. It seems to be something which would be voluntary. And then all you have to discuss is today, maybe based on the Takana of the Rabbeinu HaRashid, perhaps the wife, if she's supporting the children, maybe she also has a chiyuv to support the children, just like the father, above the age of six. That's a question I was not able to see the Takana inside. Could be that would be extended. Could be based on Dina Nemechus Adina, she would have to support her children, or at the very least, the whole discussion of embarrassing the husband, the father, and shaming him and criticizing him, the discussion in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Ayin Aleph, maybe that would apply to a wife also, perhaps, but it seems to be that the basic chiyuv does not apply to the wife, and therefore, if she's going to support her children, it could be possible that she would be allowed to use maaser money to support her children, if that's necessary. This point is a little bit more of a tzarech in. That'll conclude our discussions, our follow-up discussions on some of the points raised in the shir.